is up, wonderful people, and how is everybody getting on today? And welcome back to another episode of the podcast. This episode is going to be surrounding the topic of what should you charge? Or I guess a more apt way of putting that is, what are people willing to pay for it? And it's something I've been doing like a lot of research on and reading on over the past couple of weeks. And it's a really, really interesting topic to me. It surrounds so many different aspects of my life, like even in agency world, how do we quantify or how do we charge correctly for our product? But also into my own personal life as well. How do I value what my house is worth, or how does finances and investment and everything that kind of surrounds that whole financial piece, what are the nuances and kind of idiosyncrasies that lie within that whole topic? It's really interesting, and it's something that I think it's just a really good idea to spend an episode of the podcast discussing just some of the things that I've discovered and jump in from there. So the first real point that I would like to bring up is something that our product designer in MiniCorp, Andy, said to me. I'm not sure how long ago, but it's been a reoccurring topic for some time. So back, I'm not sure how long ago, but Andy used to play in a band professionally, and they would tour around and go from venue to venue. And what they noticed is that in very quiet months, or you know, when a bar or a venue would have a lull, the venue owner would turn around to them and say, "Listen, guys, you know, like it was a bit of a quiet night. Do you mind if we have a discount on the price?" And I can totally, like, I think everybody could realistically see that happening. But what Andy and the guys in the band said, and I thought was extremely clever, is that they would turn around to the venue owner and say, "Sure, we will totally give you a discount now during the period of, you know, quietness or during this lull. But it's tangented on, or if this venue gets busier, you guys pay us more." And that's the whole thing. I think that, you know, the venue owner is obviously looking for a deal or some sort of way to kind of circumnavigate paying the full actual price for what they got. But at the same time, it's such a good idea to turn around on the other side and say, "Well, if it's busy, you pay us more. Deal?" And then obviously the venue owner turns around at that point almost every time and says, "Yeah, no, here's the money. Here's the money for what I owe you for today." And it's such a really, really clever way of thinking about it. What should you charge? And to the venue owner looking for a trick when he's kind of going, you know, "It's not really busy, I'll charge or try to get, you know, to pay less to these guys because it wasn't busy." It's just not how it works. And then I got into more of a in-depth thinking of how we price in MiniCorp. So for those of you who don't know, MiniCorp is a product agency. And what that realistically means is that we help early stage products, or we help companies to understand what they're trying to build, how they're trying to launch their product, how to bring something from an idea or a concept to an actual tangible product. So normally, you know, these things are just nothing more than an idea bulb that goes off in somebody's head, and how you take something from that, how you take a concept from that stage of nothingness to something that's tangible. There's customers, there's a business model. It's something that's up and running and performing well. And that's what we do. And if you look at, you know, traditional pricing in agencies, the way it would work would be something akin to this. They would say, you know, "How much is our main outgoings costing us? So let's say our burn rate is X amount per month. Then how do I figure out what my cost is on a per month, per week, or per day basis? How do I then pop on my, you know, my margin on top of that of what I would like to actually charge or to, you know, gain in profit, for example?" And then we get somewhere close to what would be a daily rate or something that would be chargeable. This is, you know, there's a magnitude more that goes into this around project pricing, contingency pricing, and everything around agencies. But essentially, you're taking what your outgoings are, you're putting your margin on top of it like any traditional business, and then you're saying to the client, you know, let's price this project. Let's say this project takes 10 days and our daily rate is X, then, you know, it's 10 times X, and that's how much the project's going to cost, or something surrounding that. Like, that's the, excuse me, that is the guts of it, which makes sense. But then when you look at, you know, you take a step back and you go, as a potential client, or let's say I was hiring an agency, what I'm saying is that I give you this money because that's how much time and effort it's going to take you to build it, and you give me back a product. But realistically, you're not invested into this product as much as I am. You know, you get your paycheck whether this product is successful or not. And I find this, you know, I find this problem exists in quite substantial different services-based industries. Like, you think about the idea of a digital advertising agency or a marketing agency, for example. A marketing agency would do something very similar and say it's going to take X amount in order to run the social media on your different accounts. You take the money, we put out, you know, X amount of tweets and X amount of blah, 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 and that is the proposition. But I think there's a substantially different way of looking at it, and that's by, if we think about it from Minicorp's perspective, the more profitable or the more successful that Minicorp makes a product is how much Minicorp should get paid, in a way. So kind of going back to Andy and the band, the more people that are enjoying the bar because, or the venue because of Andy and the music that the band are putting out there, the more successful that the venue is, and hence, you know, the more that the band should get. And why is it not the same with agencies? Where, you know, if we have a vested interest in us creating a successful product, we're going to go above and beyond the call in order to do that. It doesn't have to necessarily be ingrained in our morals and ethics anymore. It's just in our vested interest to make this product as successful as possible. It makes a ton of sense. So we started then, you know, I got a whiteboard for an hour or two and started to deconstruct what that may look like. And the way that you kind of, you know, at the early stage of a product, start to measure some of its success would be, first of all, how many customers are going to use the product and how do we see the scale of that customer growth happening? Then what is the consumer acquisition cost? How much is it costing us in order to get those customers through digital advertising or, you know, medium X, Y, and Z? Then how long, you know, let's say we're charging a monthly subscription, how long on average does a customer, or would we foresee a customer lasting within this platform? You know, would they normally tap out at month number two or month number three? If it was a €20 per month subscription, then we would say that the lifetime value of a customer, if they retain for 3 months, would be €60. So let's say that we use that to base our pricing on in Minicorp instead. And we would say, you give us 10% of the lifetime value of every customer that uses the application for the first year that we build it. So let's say, you know, over the course of the first year of that app, the lifetime value of a customer was €60, but we managed to deliver, you know, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 customers into that product, of which we get 10% of the lifetime value of every single one of those customers. It makes a huge amount of success, and it makes a huge amount of actual benefit to Minicorp. It makes a benefit to the agency, it makes a benefit to the product. There is nuances that I understand in this that I'm still trying to work out. For example, what if we, you know, force fire, like kind of like absolutely go at it like crazy, burning out what the branding or what the actual, what you would call goodwill of the product is, the name of the product. And, you know, you're just trying to almost fire sale as much as you can out of the product. But there is, I think there's value in doing that, standing behind the product and actually pricing it based on you having a vested interest. So I've been thinking about that. Okay, and then the next thing is, there's in investment and in pricing, I think that there's a huge amount to be thought about when it comes to time. And understanding that if you are going to invest into something, that time plays a significant role in that investment. And I think I was listening to a podcast recently. It may be on Tim Ferriss. I will find out and I will put it in the show notes. But an extremely good point came up. And that point was that... So one of the goals that I've kind of set, and I brought this up in one of the early episodes of 2019, is that I would like to look into or to move house in 2019. But, you know, the house, we bought this house together when I was extremely young, like early 20s. And I've never really kept a significant eye on what the value of the house is. Or was over the history of it. Like, I didn't look into it every year, for example. I'd have an idea by looking at different things on different websites of what, you know, similar price properties were, but I wouldn't really understand what the value of the price or the value of the house is. And that got me really thinking that there's no... So, like, if you look at ever, you know, a stock trader, for example, and they're buying and selling stocks. They're buying and selling stocks, you know, every couple of minutes or every couple of hours or every couple of seconds in high-frequency trading, for example. And they have this, you know, let's say Coca-Cola's stock price is on their screen. And that price is going up and down and fluctuating as, you know, it's refreshing in real time. Every second is, like, fast-paced and it's moving. And then the speed at which we have the information on the Coca-Cola stock could influence the decision that I'm going to make on my investment. For instance, let's say that I'm completely aware that the price or the value of the Coca-Cola stock is declining at a rapid pace in just one day. I may jump to conclusions and say, you know, let me just get out of that stock right now. I need to dump the stock and forget about it. Not knowing that in 3 months' time, in 5 years' time, the entire thing could have rebounded and it could be astronomically higher than the price that I originally got the stock at. And that's how I see the house. I see the house and saying that I've a fair idea on what the house is worth, but I also understand that there's property bubbles and it goes up and it goes down. But I don't have a real-time price indicator or ticker as to what the value of my house is. There is almost this block that I've put in place of it, or I guess it's in place of pretty much every house, where in order for me to get an accurate value on the house, I need to have offers. Like it's only worth what somebody else is willing to pay for it. And first, I need to go and to get an estate agent to give me an estimation on what we may or may not get for the house in the current economic climate. Then you need to get two or three offers, you know, in the door, try to do some pricing, that all of that kind of stuff. But to actually get to an accurate price of the house, it's a difficult thing to do. But I think that if I had the price of the house too easily, it may have changed my decision on whether to retain the asset or to sell it too quickly. So I'm really interested about, you know, isn't that crazy from a fixed asset point of view, how that long-term investment strategy plays out in the benefit of the asset holder? So yeah, something that I've kind of started to think. And more into, I think that anything in investment, I think it was Warren Buffett that said this, that the longer that you spend in the market, the more beneficial the market will be to you. For instance, like we would expect Coca-Cola bottles at like a price of a can of Coke. You know, when we think about that in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, would we expect the price of Coke to be the same? Absolutely not. We'd expect it to be, you know, 3 times or 5 times or 10 times more compared to what it is right now. It's the same as going, if we looked 10 years into the past, into history, what was the price of a can of Coke then? And so the longer that you can hold on to that asset, the longer that you can hold on to that investment, and then the time spent in the investment will pay out. You know, like it's pretty probable and something to be thinking about, I guess. And then that also got me to think about the investments that MiniCorp makes. So, you know, we own equity in some of the startups or some of the companies and products that we've built. And we're very, very hands-off. Like, we see these investments at such long-term plays. There's, it's going to be a substantial period of time before any of these investments or equity plays pay off to what we expect to see. And that's really interesting to me. And I think that I've discovered that element about myself where I'm willing to, okay, say that, yes, this is a strategy that I want to go for, but then also to take a step back and say, let that go and run itself now, and I'm going to move on to the next thing. Let's keep going. But it's exciting. And then I guess the next thought that kind of went through my mind is into people. So when you think about, what's the best way to put this? There was a huge controversy recently around cryptocurrency and Bitcoins and everything around that space. And what all of the people would say who were investors or, you know, who really understood financial markets, for example, is that a Bitcoin, or I heard somebody else describe it akin to, let's say, a piece of art. So if I went and I bought a beautiful piece of art, and let's say I spent $10,000 on that piece of art, I then try to, you know, I hold on to the art for 5-10 years time. But what I'm really betting on in an investment point of view is that there's going to be, you know, first of all, an art ecosystem. Second of all, somebody interested in this painting, that the, you know, the more collectible that this painting becomes, the more that it's worth. So you're almost basing it on this whole environment, this whole, that this ecosystem will exist in order to sell this painting. It's going to become more unique and more sought after, and etc. You see this also with like cars, like classic cars or extremely rare cars, collectible items, I guess, in many respects. Bitcoins are the same, where, you know, everybody was basing them on, there's X amount of Bitcoins. Whatever somebody else is willing to pay for it is really what it's worth. And as, you know, a lot of really, I guess, sheep mentality started to kick in, where people were saying, okay, well, let's jump on that bandwagon. It just seems to be going up and up and up, and it became something substantially different. Invariably, I guess, it really comes down to, it's only worth what somebody else is willing to pay for it. And what Buffett and the people would say is that you're not getting any yield out of those items in the short term. And by yield, we mean, you know, you buy the Bitcoin, you hold the Bitcoin. The Bitcoin does not perform for you in any shape or form until you go to sell the coin. Same with the piece of art. You buy the art, you stick it in storage, it stays there, you go to sell it, that's when you recoup on your investment. Versus Buffett and the gang would say that going for yield items is substantially better. For example, if you bought a property, so we go back to the house, if I rent this house, I'm getting the income of the rent or the yield of the rent over a period of time, plus I still have the fixed asset of the house. And this is why, you know, going for stocks on the private companies, for example, or even publicly traded companies, Coca-Cola stock, for example, we would expect that the yield, the dividend return, so what a dividend is what the company will pay out on based on profits at the end of a year, for example. The dividend return from Coca-Cola on successful years, which is based on the entire team trying to make the company as successful as possible, is the yield of purchasing that stock. So you both get the dividend, but you also get to retain the stock and sell the stock at a later date. But with the Bitcoin, you can see where this whole thing falls down. But anyway, it's just something to really think about. And I think the more people that understand this stuff, the better. And to really understand what is something worth and what should you charge, and you know, what kind of lies in between there. And then the next point that I would have, and I guess one to kind of leave everybody with, how long have I been rambling on for? Okay. Is how do you understand what your value is? And I think this is something that I see a lot of people really struggling with, where they look at kind of the industry values of what somebody in their position will get paid and kind of just emulate that. But I would encourage them to do it a different way. And the different way that I would describe is, let me think. Imagine there is a company that existed and you want to work for that company. You know that within that company, they're having a problem with whatever it may be. And that problem is costing them, let me think. I don't know. Let's say it's costing them 100 grand per year. So they're investing in their business into services and things in lots of different ways. In order to solve this problem, they're paying 100 grand per year in order to solve it. And you've defined that problem. You understand what that problem is, and it lies in the expertise of what you're able to solve for them. Why would you not turn around to them and say, listen, I'll jump in here at, you pay me 80 grand per year, and I know that you guys will then save 20 grand. And to make that complete case as to, you save money, I get a job, I get paid, everybody wins in this entire scenario. Then the next thing is, you know, how do you go from 80K to 160K and kind of start to double up your wages based on the value that you're bringing to that company or thing? And I think that there isn't really any set rules in this perspective at all. Understand what the problems are, try to price or estimate how much is being spent on those problems by the different companies, and then try to solve them at either a lower cost or at a time saving in order to add as much value to that company, increase your worth, and also increase the dependency of that company on your experience and value. If you can do that, you can really put some sort of a euro figure on what you're actually worth. The next big thing that I'd say when it goes to steps to understand your value is learn like a mofo to sell yourself. I've seen so many people do this wrong that it still gets me hard. Not in that sense. Hard as in like it hurts me when I see this happening. And that's, if you cannot sell the solution or you don't possess the characteristics or ability to do it, find somebody who will and can. A lot of this has been done in history by people doing introductions, selling people on other people, and that kind of becomes a thing. But then you have, let's say, artists, for example. We take the idea or the what I was talking about the painting, the collectible. The artist invariably would find it or would struggle to sell themselves because, you know, they're extremely creative. They would find it difficult. If somebody didn't like their art, for example, they may take it very to heart. They're unable to disconnect themselves in the process. But you look at an artist, a musician, an actor, a footballer, anybody that's extremely creative or within that industry, they'll have what we would call an agent. And the agent would go and essentially sell who the people are, their skills, their talents, and find the best jobs and areas for them to work in. So either one of two things: get extremely well at understanding who you are as a person and being able to turn that into sellable items and being good at selling yourself, or B, find people who can do it very well for you. I wonder, actually, is that what we do in MiniCorp? Like, we've essentially built a stellar product team, but the engineers, designers, and things, they rely on me in order to sell the business, the ecosystem of what we do in MiniCorp to our clients to the best of my ability in order to get to increase the business. That's really interesting and something I haven't really thought about. And then the next thing is, you know, if you're now making a good wage, you've understood what you're actually worth and you're getting paid it, please, please, please don't spend it all. Take a percentage and reinvest it back into yourself. If you don't, it will be at your own peril. Things will invariably start to change in the world. If you're an engineer, it may be different programming languages. If it's design, it may be different patterns and processes and aesthetics or whatever it may be. But if you don't take money out of what you make and invest it back into your passion and dreams and into what you do, and you will get left behind. And that's like, I know it's a hard thing to say, but like, find something that you love, use the money that you, or some, a portion of the money that you make through your passion to invest back into yourself to ensure that you're just on top of your game the entire time. And excuse me. I think that'll be a good way to do it. Okay, I hope you all found this episode really, really good. I think, yeah, it's a really good topic and it's something that I'm really interested in at the moment. What you should charge and, you know, what are things worth and how do people value them? So I hope you really, really liked it. If you did, I ask you but for a few things. Number one, if you could hit me up on social media or send me an email at brian@minicorp.ie and just let me know your comments of what you thought about the episode or previous episodes of the podcast in general. If you really, really liked it and enjoyed it and would like more people to discover it, please, please, please do reviews, leave all the things, make it happen so that we all can grow. Thank you all, and I will see you in the next one.